Ladies and gentlemen, what's up? Welcome to the Musician's Mentor Podcast. I'm your host, Travis Mark, and I'm super excited to say that my guest today happens to play in one of my absolute favorite bands. She is an author, a motivational speaker, a candle maker, and a super duper bassist in the one and only alt rock band Cold. We get into some super cool topics in this interview, which I won't spoil in this introduction, but I will say, as usual, if you're getting anything from these, please do us a favor, leave us a rating, leave us a review, share these with your like-minded friends. That's it for my blabbering though. So without further ado, ladies and gentlemen, the one, the only, Lindsay Manfredi. Hey Lindsay, it's Travis from The Musician's Mentor. How you doing?
I'm great. How are you?
Really well, thank you. I know that we spoke very, very briefly before I hit the record button, but we're going to jump straight into this interview. I can't thank you enough for your time, and we're going to cover as much of your life story as possible within the next hour. So, okay. With that being said, mostly music, I mean, you know. With that being said, bit of a weird one, but I ask all my guests to do it. Rather than me tell everybody your whole life story from like Wikipedia pages and the internet and stuff, would you just give us a brief introduction as to who Lindsay Manfredi is, so that our listeners have a better idea of where you're coming from during the course of this interview?
No, absolutely. Well, my name is Lindsay Manfredi. I play bass in the alternative rock band Cold. I am an author of a book. It's kind of a self-development book called Unfuckwithable, A Guide to Inspired Badassery. I'm a candle maker. I live in Los Angeles, and I really enjoy just inspiring people to do what they love to do. And I love music, of course, which is one of the reasons why I'm speaking with you. I love playing bass. I play guitar. I sing. I dabble in a lot of different things.
Amazing. So I saw that you actually studied in Indiana. So were you?
I did, Indiana University.
Yeah. Were you always from LA, or did you just land up in LA?
I'm in LA. I've been in LA since 2016. I love it here, for one. But when I had moved here in 2016, when we were just getting ready to start doing the album, The Things We Can't Stop. So I just ended up staying, because I loved it so much. But yeah, I'm originally from Indiana. I was one of those girls who had to get out of that state because Indiana literally doesn't have anything in it. And I moved when I was 20 to Florida to start a band. Like, I packed all my music gear up and went to Florida. So I lived in Florida for a while, Chicago, Tampa, and ended up being here.
Cool. Cool.
Well, I also lived in Indianapolis for a brief time, too. I'd go out to school and things. But I'm from Kokomo, Indiana.
Okay. Yeah, I just thought I'd clear that up. Let's talk about bass in particular. What made you choose that instrument? And furthermore, fast forwarding quite a dramatic amount, when you got the call to join Cold almost like a decade ago, I'm spitballing here. I could be a little wrong on the numbers.
Yeah. Okay.
How did you feel like, it's a bit of a weird one, but like when you get that kind of call, especially when you've got to learn existing parts before being in a position that you can create your own, do you learn those parts like as sort of verbatim as possible? Or do you kind of learn them so that you know the arrangements and the songs and the keys and then kind of put your own spin on it?
Great question. Okay, let's start with the first one. I started playing bass when I was 27. I'd been playing acoustic guitar. I'd been writing my own music. I'd been doing a lot of like coffee shop gigs. And I met my ex-husband, and he was an incredible bassist. He played stand-up bass. He played guitar. He played all of these different things. And after we got married, we decided that we wanted to start a band together, but he wanted to play guitar because all of the bands he had been in previously, he mainly played bass. So he was like, hey, Lindsay, you already play guitar. It's the top four notes. Just here you go. So he put a Fender Jaguar in my hand. And I was like, my first bass lines that I learned were kind of rockabilly-ish because we were kind of in a rockabilly band. And that's really when I started loving it. And I just became I excelled at that much quicker than I did at playing guitar. So the rest is history. I just started playing bass and I was still playing guitar. I was playing in a band called Neon Love Life, where my bassist and I would switch our roles because we both play bass and we both play guitar. And then I got the cold gig. So
that's awesome.
So that being said, and God, that was back in 2000. So I've been playing bass since 2006. When I got the call to join Cold, it was completely surreal. I'd been a Cold fan for such a long time, and a lot of people already know that, like, my story with Cold was just like a dream come true, because I had already had the Cold tattoo on my arm for years and years and years, like since I lived in Florida. And I basically, like, to learn all of that, I did want to learn it verbatim. It's very important to be true to the song. There are a couple songs I do take some liberties in, So Long June. We haven't played that live, but I did a whole different run for that. But yeah, I just literally sat down with the bass and my speaker and learned each song.
Cool.
Wrote down the chord progressions and just started rehearsing nonstop.
That's awesome. Something I always like to ask, because a lot of people sort of feel like they're going to do their thing, but sometimes your thing's not appropriate, you know? That's not to say your thing's not appropriate. That's not how I meant that. But you know what I'm trying to say.
Well, I mean, as a bassist, I'm there to serve the song, and the songs were written perfectly. Jeremy Marshall was such an incredible bassist and great ideas. And I got my chance to do that on the last album that we did. But as far as all of the old Cold stuff, the old school stuff, I absolutely wanted to do it exactly as it was on the albums.
Cool. Yeah, I like that. And a question that I didn't have prepared, but I'm going to ask you anyway, is you've been in the band quite a while. I mean, almost 10 years, right?
Yeah, 10 years.
So when you're working on new material, coming from a songwriter background, do you have any say in how that material forms now? Or is it more or less of a, you kind of, you know your role and you're happy within your role, so you stay there rather than push boundaries?
Well, I'm very blessed in the fact that Scooter listens to all of my ideas. He's such an incredible songwriter. So he really is like the captain of the ship. But I got a co-writing credit for Better Human because I wrote the chord progression for the chorus. And so that was a thing where going into the studio, I knew, like he said, you're probably not going to be contributing to any of the writing. And I didn't take it personally because, again, he's the songwriter of the group. And then I did have an idea and he listened and we ended up using that. So it all really just depends. Like, hey, here's an idea, but it's okay because sometimes I have ideas that don't really go with what's going on. And that's okay too.
Yeah, that's cool. That's really nice that he listened to the idea too. That's fantastic.
Oh, absolutely.
So when doing my research for the interview, I noticed that, you know, I mean, you briefly spoke about it during your introduction, but I just noticed how diverse your career or your journey has been. I mean, you've obviously got the author credits with your book, the Candlemaker thing, the blogger thing, the musician thing. Your company, Linstar.
Yeah.
You know, so I know it's possibly a bit of a strange question because you're already in all of those kind of vocations, but how important do you feel having diversity as a musician if you're going to try and live the life as a musician, how important do you think diversity is?
Well, okay, so I feel like diversity is very important because my main source of income comes from being on the road with the band. But when we're not touring, I can't get a normal job 9 to 5. So I got this degree, which is great, but like, I'm not going to go work for a company because it's like, oh, 6 months out of the year I'm touring. So that's one of the main reasons why I've diversified it. I'm a creator first. And so anything I can do to create, that's what I need to do. So I have to like kind of work on my own terms. I'm very much a self-starter. So like for me to get up and like work out and do all of the things, like I live by a list and there's nothing more satisfying than checking things off. And I think that all of these different experiences that I've had helps with my music. For example, I'm obsessed with Gracie Abrams right now. And I just learned how to play one of her songs on guitar. And then I was like, I'm going to learn how to play it on piano. So like over the summer, since I've been off tour, I've been doing like piano lessons on GarageBand and just trying to teach myself as much as possible.
That's awesome.
And it gives me something to do. So it helps me with my personal songwriting and it helps me just be a better musician altogether.
Yeah, which is the goal, right?
Absolutely.
Cole's your main gig, but I saw that Earshot just finished a record. So
yes, I'm not on that record.
Oh, you were just out celebrating with them.
No, I'm there. Yes, I've been dating Will for the last year. So
okay.
They're being supportive and hanging out but I am not playing bass on that record. John Novak is.
Okay, my apologies.
PA, along with Aaron King. But no, it's all
okay, well, to go back to kind of where I was headed. I mean, Cold hasn't been your only experience with bands. I mean, you mentioned earlier Neon Love Life, there was Picture Yes. You've done a few band kind of configurations and career tries with bands, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So possibly a little bit of a loaded question, but what do you think are some of the hardest parts about being in a band?
I think that dynamic is a pretty important thing to do. And I've been in bands, like some of the bands I've been in haven't had the best dynamics. Neon Love Life was very much a punk rock, all-female band. There were a lot of, you know, it was extremely successful for what it was, and it helped with the Girls Rock Indianapolis project that we had started back then. And all of these bands that I've been in and people I've worked with and producers I've worked with have really helped shape me and like have given me a knowledge that I wouldn't have had I not had those experiences. But I think that the hardest thing is working with people and having them hear and having that creative, that diversity and communicating that in a respectful way. Some people work better at that than others. If that helps answer your question, but like all of it, you know, you learn from everyone and everything.
I agree. And the, you know, the reason I ask is not to be controversial or anything like that. It's, I myself have been in bands pretty much my whole life. And it's just interesting because where I'm at now in my life, I find that some people pretty much, like you just said, some people communicate so well. And I don't mean just verbally, you know, sometimes they can just, you know where you stand with some people, especially within bands. Mm-hmm. And then sometimes you're in certain bands and it's almost weird. It's like certain things don't get spoken about and it's almost like everyone's just coasting along, but no one really knows. Yeah, hypothetically, and I don't mean to turn this into me talking about stuff during your interview, but hypothetically, like I've seen some bands where a hired gun will come in and that person can stay in that band for 2-3 years, but never become a member of the band, and things like that never get communicated. And that sort of aspect of being in bands has always fascinated me because that would never fly in like a business, and bands are kind of businesses. So it's weird when bands mm-hmm. operate like that, you know?
Oh, absolutely. But again, everything, yeah, it's like you have to just serve the role while you're in it.
Yeah, I agree. So let's talk a little bit about your book, Unfuckwithable. I like that title. That's cool. I definitely definitely had to practice that a couple of times to not change the where the herbal falls, you know.
Unfuckwithable.
Yeah, it's very cool. Tell us a little bit about the book. If you want, give it a plug, you know, tell people where they can buy it. And then, if you wouldn't mind, just to bring it back to music, tell us a little bit about how you feel having some of the mindsets expressed within your book have helped your music career.
Well, absolutely. So, Unfuckwithable is really, it's my journey through music, through life, on how I got to be in Cold. And just the story of not giving up on my dreams and just the lessons along the way of things where you fuck up, but you have like detours in the right direction. And it's a personal development book or self-development book based on the law of attraction, which I truly believe in. This my whole life has been just a series of universal chess moves. Like, oh, here's this person and here's this opportunity. And just following that, like knowing that the universe has got my back, if that makes any sense.
Yeah.
So, yeah, and it's great. And I have some great reviews. The book can be found on Amazon, or you can get a signed copy from my website, lindsaymanfredi.com. But it's really a great book, and I'm, you know, currently working on two others, and hopefully I'll have a follow-up fairly soon. But I'm just juggling my time right now.
Yeah. I mean, it sounds like you got a million things going. So I love the fact that you mentioned lists earlier. I'm a big list person. And I do think when you're working with so many different aspects, if you don't have some kind of list, you're going to just get lost, because your attention's so spread that how do you make sure everything gets done? You know, so it's very good.
Yeah, well, it's time management. That's so important, because I do have so many things I do during the day. And like, I have a whole hour-long self-care routine where, you know, you have to read for 20 minutes a day, at least something. Like right now I'm reading Lewis Howes' The Greatness Mindset. And when I get back from this upcoming tour that we have, because we're out for the second leg of the Year of the Spider tour, I leave on September 1st to start pre-production with the guys in our first shows in Fort Myers on September 5th. And we're doing Blue Ridge Rock Festival and all that stuff. So that's super exciting. So As soon as I get back, then I'm going to have the rest of the year. We're hopefully working on a new album at the beginning of the year.
Oh, super cool.
It's been in the talks. So, but I have to keep myself busy and create during those few months. So I'm really kind of trying to figure out if I'm just going to be focused on the book stuff, or if I'm going to be really ramping up my candle stuff, or if I really want to start a podcast. That's been on my list of things to do for a while now. And I just need to do some prioritizing.
So let me ask a couple of questions that are kind of like segues just from certain things that have occurred thus far in our conversation. These aren't actual questions, but I'm going to indulge anyway. So if you wouldn't mind, you mentioned manifestation and like how you're a big believer in that sort of stuff. It's interesting to me, you had a Cold tattoo, you ended up in Cold. That itself is some kind of weird manifestation thing that happened. I like to believe, at least.
I believe that's a thing.
Yeah. So first question that isn't a official question, an official question. Tell us how that gig came about. Like, you know, what happened that you got involved with Cold?
Well, Scooter was looking for a new bassist. Jeremy had gone to play with someone else. I think the band was called Fall to June. And they wanted to diversify the band, so they were actually looking for a female. And how that came about is he was just asking around. Well, someone had seen me. I was on tour with Picture Yes and Saving Abel. And, you know, we share kind of the same fan base. So someone snapped my photo while I was playing the bass and was like, hey, check her out. She's also got the Cold tattoo, so this could be perfect. So that's basically, so Scooter just researched me. But like when he, like another fun puzzle, piece of the puzzle is I'm actually in the sleeve of the Year of the Spider album, because back then I had gotten a cold tattoo right after 13 Ways to Bleed on Stage came out. And so they had sent, I was like on their Cold Army team, like their street team, handing out cassettes, because that's how long ago it was. And they had asked their fans to send in their cold tattoos. So I actually ended up landing in that, and that album went gold. So Scooter has had my photo hanging in his living room like since 2004.
That is crazy. And
he had no idea that I was in that, like when he called. So basically he just did his research. He saw my TED talk that I did on Girls Rock Indianapolis and said, this is the girl. And, you know, it was one of the scariest yeses, because I didn't play a five string bass either. And I actually picked up a Warwick and tried to do it, but I was so used to playing a four string bass that he was like, I kept hitting the B string when it should have been, like, it was just crazy. So he was like, just play the four string. We'll just, you know, change octaves on things that are lower.
Yeah.
And that's what we did. We made it work.
That's
but
amazing.
It was so scary, because I had to like learn all of these songs, but it helped, again, it helped me develop as a musician. So it was great.
How long did you have? So from getting the call, how many songs did you have to learn before you went and met in a room?
Oh man. Well, we actually didn't tour. So I got the call in 2014. And so yeah, almost a year. I practiced like so many songs. I tried to learn as much as I could for years. And we finally went in and did the album. So I hadn't even played a show with them before we did the album. So my first experience playing in a room was creating.
Wow.
And then we went on tour in 2019, and then like we've been on tour since.
Wow. That's so cool.
Sans the pandemic.
Yeah.
So I had years. And
well, I mean, so that's, you know, a blessing for the time, and I suppose a curse, because, you know, as a creative, sometimes having that much time can also be not so good. But in this situation, that worked wonderfully. So incredible.
It did, but I'm the procrastinator of all procrastinators. So, I mean, there were, you know, 6 months where I really wasn't doing anything.
Yeah.
Because it just kept getting pushed back. We were supposed to do the album, and then it wouldn't work out where we could all be in a room. But then like at the end of the day, I had moved in with Scooter in Temecula, because I'd moved to Los Angeles and broken up with my boyfriend, and Scooter was like, we're about to do the album, just move here. So that's when I really like was serious and playing constantly, learning all of the songs.
That's cool.
Scooter will tell you, I'd be in my room for hours just playing.
That's amazing. Dedication. That's what's needed.
Absolutely.
And my second unofficial question is, so you mentioned that you guys are going to potentially start working on a new album. So
yes.
Obviously that was your introduction into the band, so it doesn't necessarily apply in that regard. But when you start working on new material like now, like working potentially on a new album, do you guys do it the old school way where you all get into a room together and Scooter comes with, you know, potentially a song and you thrash it out as a band? Or is it more a, and I'm putting inverted commas up here, even though you can't see them. Is it more of an inverted comma sort of modern music situation where he maybe demos a song, sends it to the band, you guys kind of figure out your parts, you get together and everybody sees how things sit?
Well, how I've experienced it so far is us just threshing it out in a room. Scooter has a lot of ideas and he's been working on it, and this next album is going to be a little bit heavier. We're going back to some heavier roots, and he has plenty, but I haven't heard any of it yet. So when we get in a room, I'll be hearing it for the first time. He'll have ideas. We'll all have ideas, and then we'll just build on his, if you want to call it, backbone or skeleton.
Yeah. That's cool.
And there's, you know, he might have some completely ready to go and like, I want you to play this. I want you to play this. Angelo play this, Ed play that. Like, so I don't know. I'm just as excited about this as the next person. And I can't wait to do it, because that's just so much fun getting in a room with the guys.
Yeah. And like from my side, it's so cool that you're involved with the band you were such a fan of. Like, that's just, that's like winning the lottery, you know? That's amazing.
It really is. I mean, it's literally a dream come true. Like, but it's crazy because when I was a little girl, like, I would envision myself on stage from just a very young age, like the daydreaming thing. Yeah. Daydreaming is not a waste of time.
No.
Like, that's visualizing, manifesting, putting it out in the quantum field. When you just believe in it, like, you're in that feeling that you have it. And it's, I forgot what I was going to say with this. I had a point. It's so cool because I visualize, like, as a little girl, like, oh, Eddie Vedder is going to call me up and I'm going to be in Pearl Jam. Or, so the fact that your favorite singer, like the one band tattoo that you have, reached out, it is a dream come true, and it is like winning the lottery. And I'm very blessed because Scooter is also a best friend of mine now.
That's amazing. You've obviously spent a lot of time on the road in the last 10 years. What do you think are some of the hardest lessons you've had to learn while touring?
I'm gonna say this because it's funny. Will likes to say this to me. Definitely, like, staying in my lane. Not getting involved in the drama, because there's always drama on the road. And just maintaining a positive attitude. Because it's challenging. There are some times where you're just like, if this person says one more word to me, I'm going to punch them in the face. So it's just maintaining that self-control and breathing and being like, okay, this is what I love to do. I'm here for the fans. Here for the music. This is my family, and everyone fights. But those are the biggest lessons. And don't overpack.
Yeah. And what about, like, let's call them touring survival tips? And I mean that from more of a health and gear point of view. Like, have you learned any things along the way that maybe just allow you to keep your mental state at a more peaceful sort of state because you've prepared certain things away from just your breathing and staying in your lane?
Oh, 1,000. Well, I mean, I meditate.
How hard is it to meditate on a tour bus with other people around?
Well, I have noise canceling headphones and I just go into my bunk and I get in the dark and I just do it. It's pretty easy. I mean, living with all of these guys who are really loud, you find ways to breathe it in. And I have a really good support system of friends and family that are always there if I just need to vent or talk to anybody.
That's cool. Let's switch things completely on their head for a little while, okay? And again, possibly a little bit of a strange one, but knowing what you know now in the music business and the knowledge that you have or have had gained over the years as your time as a professional, if you were starting again or had to start over, what would your overall approach be as to how you would get into the music business?
Well, first off, network is very important, and I've been blessed to have a big network of people who are supportive and friends who are in the music industry. So one of the things that I always say when it comes to anything is, like, I have these two mottos in life, and one is from Field of Dreams and one is from LL Cool J. So build it and they will come, and then doing it and doing it and doing it well. So my approach is first write the absolute best, most top-notch music I can possibly create. And then, like, so once you build it, they'll come, and then you get it out to your network. And that's how I would personally do it. And I actually am working on some solo stuff. I don't really want to perform it, but I'm a songwriter.
Yeah.
And I would love to sell my songs to some of my favorite artists right now.
Yeah.
Because I have such a diverse music palette, and, like, my favorite stuff to listen to is pop. Like, I love Harry Styles, I love Taylor Swift, I love Gracie Abrams, I love Banks. Like, there's just so many incredible artists out there that I would love to write for.
It's so cool that you're open to that stuff. And I don't mean to stereotype, but typically when you speak to a rock musician, they won't ever admit to listening to some sort of stuff like that. Or I find with a lot of the metal guys in particular, actually they're quite open-minded. It's more the fans of metal music or harder music that, like, if you tell them you're listening to something like Banks, they like... They almost give you this.
Are you kidding me? Like, that judgmental song, Begging Look. For Thread, is the song Begging for Thread. I wish I would have written that. It's
she's incredible.
Such an incredible fucking song.
Yeah.
Like, I love music. Halsey, fuck it, forget it. I just went and saw her last year at Front Row. It was such an incredible experience.
Yeah, I would believe that. I've never seen her live, but I mean, those pop stars at that level, I mean, their shows are just incredible. And the fact that Taylor Swift gets so much hate blows my mind, because I mean, that show, no one's going to be able to beat that show right now. I mean, she's the top pop star in the world. It's like, come on.
I know. She's top Beyonce. And like, I mean, but Taylor Swift is such a kind human.
Yeah.
On top of everything else. And I don't understand why people have given her so much backlash, because she's an incredible artist and she deserves every ounce of success that she gets.
I couldn't agree more. I saw a picture the other day. It was a young Taylor Swift. She was obviously in her teens, and she's in a band with all much older men. And she was playing on like a little wooden, almost palleted kind of stage, I don't know where. And it had like a homemade banner that said Taylor Swift, and there was no one around. And mm-hmm. someone had written, "Always believe in yourself," and posted the picture. And I was like, that's fucking cool, man. Like, again, I think she deserves to be where she is. And like you say, the kindness thing, like, she does so much for people that doesn't get spoken about. It blows my mind that people are so quick to hate on that girl.
You know. Yeah. Well, obviously the haters are not winning, because she's selling out SoFi for 6 nights in a row.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
So, and I unfortunately didn't get to make that any of those shows, and I'm bummed that I missed it. But yeah, hopefully one day she's on my bucket list of artists to see live.
Yeah, I agree. Okay. Going back to Cold, you mentioned some of the stuff on the bus, you know, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. I don't want to go into like personal lives and things like that. It's none of my business or anybody's business, really. But obviously, given that Cold have had a few lineup changes over the years, it shows that real life kicks in, or that sometimes bands can create these political situations that aren't always easy to deal with. And, you know, band politics aren't always the nicest things, especially when you're in the band. It's always nice to read about in like autobiographies and stuff, but those are tense situations, as I'm sure you've realized or even experienced at this point in your life. But if you could tell us what some advice you would share would be on how to try and keep band politics at bay, or if you see that things are going to maybe get heated, maybe little things that you guys do or you personally do to try and, you know, neutralize situations to allow a win-win situation rather than a Peter Criss, Ace Frehley kiss situation.
Well, I think that a lot of that comes down to emotional maturity. If you feel like you need to win a fight, that's just stupid. Sometimes it's best to not say anything and let that person experience whatever emotions they're experiencing. Because at the end of the day, I consider Cold my family. Like, I'm living with my brothers, and we all have meltdowns every once in a while. So, again, going back to staying in your lane, there are times where you just walk away and go into your bunk and everything works itself out. There are times where you sit down and you have a band meeting and you all get together and thresh that out and talk about it. And I'm so lucky to be in a band where we do that. If we have an issue, we're very open and communicative, and we all will sit down and say, okay, this is the issue. And everyone does their best to to work on whatever it is that they need to work on.
That's very cool. Very mature, like you say. It's like a lot of bands just won't talk about these things, you know.
Well, and I'm sure there was definitely, you know, there are times in the past where, hence the lineup changes, where that hasn't happened. And so, you know, things kept inside have turned into resentment and it just boiled over and, you know, just pretty much imploded. Yeah. The current lineup that we have now, though, this last tour that we were on was like the most successful, fun tours I've ever been on because everybody was just honest and genuinely care for one another. Not to say that there weren't any meltdowns, because of course there are, but it was a lot easier. It was handled in a much more adult and mature way.
Yeah.
Which makes us all excited to like get back on the road again. Like, I miss these guys.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's how it should be. I mean, you keep the situation healthy so that everybody essentially wants to go to work, you know? I mean, nobody wants to go to a job that they hate, you know, like that's
not
proven time and time again, you know. All right, Lindsay, I've got two kind of loaded questions left. They kind of counterproductive to each other, but I'm going to shoot with them anyway. My first is, and I'm sorry if this seems like maybe not the coolest question to ask, but what are some of the worst things that have happened to you in your musical career? Like, just whether that's things breaking down or you not feeling ready for a gig or something going wrong at a gig or anything. That have you ever had a situation where after a gig or a tour or anything you thought to yourself, I've got to get out of this situation? That kind of situation is what I'm talking about.
Okay. Repeat that again.
Okay. So basically, I'm trying to find out, have you ever been in a situation where something has made you question the place you were musically or doing music in general? And if so, what was it?
Well, I've been in unhealthy bands before, so there have been instances where in my old band, I won't mention which one, but we were playing at the Whiskey and everybody decided to get drunk and nobody was playing well. And I was sober. I don't drink before I go on stage. So I knew at that moment that I was like playing, and it was kind of a reunion thing, that I was like, I'm never going to play one more show with this band ever again. Because nobody was stepping up, nobody was doing what they needed to do, and I didn't want to associate myself with that.
Yeah.
So I never played a show with that band again.
Did that conversation take place directly after the gig, or was there like talk about it after the gig, like after days had gone by?
I didn't even really need to. I was already living in Los Angeles. That band was from Indiana, and they had flown in and we had done a rehearsal at a rehearsal space in North Hollywood. So I just stopped playing with them and they got a new basis.
Okay.
I didn't really need to say anything. They knew I was pissed.
Yeah. Yeah. And right.
Especially
so.
I was in Cold at the time and I, you know, that wasn't what I wanted to represent.
Yeah.
Because I take music very seriously. There was a fun moment though that I had the first time that we played Jacksonville. I was very nervous. And because I was playing Jacksonville for the first time in Cold, and everybody, I was semi-judged in the beginning. And so we had two songs in the set that are very similar in notes and kind of in rhythm, but not. And we had Don't Belong in the set, and we had The Break in the set. Mm-hmm. And I remember getting on there, and like right as, you know, the click, Tony's got the click going, and I was like, oh my God, I started playing the wrong rhythm, but the right notes. And I just stopped playing and I walked over because I could not for the life of me remember what the rhythm was. Even though I'd been playing them for all of these shows,
yeah.
I just blanked. And I walked over and my buddy Bobby Keller was backstage, like side stage. And I was like, I don't know the fucking song. Like, I don't remember it. And like the song's going, I'm not playing. And I was like, and then as soon as the chorus hit, I was in and I remembered. But so I was like chalking it off. Like people didn't know that I forgot. They will now. But you know, we'll just call it a technical difficulty with my bass.
Yeah.
But there's like certain things that that's only happened that one time, but it was terrifying. So I came back and like I totally know both of those songs perfect. But
yeah.
Hey, it was a moment.
Yeah, and also, you know, I mean, fatigue sometimes and nerves and a combination of things, you know, no one can blame me for that. That happens to everybody, I'm sure.
It's
quite funny with bands like Cold, and I see it with a lot of bands from that sort of time. You know, when you go check out their like Facebook pages and their Instagram pages and stuff, the fans, and I don't mean that in a derogatory way. Sometimes people use fans weirdly. But the people who follow the bands and have for a while, it's interesting because there definitely seems to, since the invent of social media, there seems to be this like, there's no longer this buffer line between bands and fans or followers or whatever you want to call them. It's like a lot of people, if they feel like, oh, this person should be playing this instrument in this band, they let the world know. And it's quite interesting because it's like, you know, it's what I always find quite interesting with this situation, and maybe I see it through different eyes because I myself am a gigging musician, but I always think it's weird because it's like people are so quick to moan when a band member gets replaced. Even if that person died and got replaced, it's like there's never like, I just don't understand. It's like we should be happy as fans of bands, at least in my opinion, mm-hmm. we should be happy that that band wants to continue. Now, I know it's maybe a little weird when a singer passes away or leaves a band and the band continues. I know that there's certain feelings with that. But again, mm-hmm. you can't resent a band who want to work and keep moving forward if a member in that band didn't want to keep moving forward and had to leave. You know, it's like I wish sometimes that some of these more vocal fans/followers would consider those sort of aspects of it before they just go put smut all over the internet, because I got some friends in some really great bands who weren't necessarily the original members, and man, sometimes they get such hate, and I kind of just go, but the band sounds better than ever, and like they still going and they still putting out material. Like, would you be happier if they just stopped? Because then you would just be left with what they had, and that's great, but like they still putting out material. We should embrace this, you know?
Oh, 1000%. It's awful that people do that, but it's also a part of the business, and at the end of the day you just have to ignore all of that. I've had people talk shit about me my whole life, so yeah. That's one of the reasons why I wrote the book Unfuckable.
Yeah.
Yeah, I can't let anyone else dictate how I feel.
Yeah.
And I know how hard I work, and I know my intentions, and I know how much I care about the band, and it shows. So like if people do boo hoo about, oh, well, what happened to Nick and Johnny? We'll come to a show. You'll see that, you know, we sound better than ever right
yeah.
now.
Yeah.
Cause everyone cares. We're all in it, and it's a beautiful thing. Or don't come to a show. Like then, all right, bitch away. No, nobody's listening.
Yeah, or, you know, just go be happy. Just go be happy, man.
Yeah, go do you. Go manage your life.
Yeah, yeah, like seriously, like the social media world has like, oh, man, it's just I've got such a love-hate thing with it because it's like I get it and I know you need it and all that kind of stuff, but mm-hmm. some days I really just I wish that I could invent an app that made all the social medias disappear.
Yeah, well, we do need it. It's like my main source of income, but yeah, there's, you know, but also that comes like to self-regulating and discernment for yourself. Like if you're not aware of who you are and what you want to do, you're going to always be criticizing other people. So, yeah. and you can't force people to like evolve. So
I agree.
I think that like for me personally, I used to follow certain social media accounts, and when I saw them, I didn't feel good about myself. So I took it upon myself to delete a lot of people that I that wasn't healthy for me. So now when I open up social media in the morning, I'm fluttered with messages like from the universe and from, you know, smart people, Lewis Howes, Mel Robbins, like people I truly respect that are in leadership positions.
Yeah.
So I have like, and I want to create that for other people too. And that's what I'm hoping to build as well, especially when I start the Inspired AF podcast and all that stuff.
Yeah.
Like that's important to me.
That's awesome. Good goal. Good goal to have. Lindsay, I've got one last question for you. What do you think has been the best piece of advice you've ever received in regards to your musical career?
The best piece of advice?
Yeah.
Well, it's to it's going to come from Tony Robbins. He has said, say yes first. Or maybe, no, Richard Branson, not Tony Robbins. Say yes and learn how to do it later.
That's cool.
Like never pass up an opportunity to play with other people, to learn new music, and just to build on your experience.
Yeah. I like that. I like Richard Branson and Tony Robbins too. So always good. They're just so full of wisdom, those dudes, you know?
I love wisdom. It's a thing. I seek it on a daily basis.
Yeah.
To be a better human in this world and just create this light.
I agree.
And hopefully it spreads.
Wicked. Well, Lindsay, that was awesome. Thank you so much for your time. Thank you for your wisdom and your insight and all that stuff. I got loads from it. I'm feeling pumped up. I hope that listeners will feel the same. I will link all of your relative links in the show notes. So if anyone wants to check out Lindsay Manfredi, please do so. Check out Cold. But for now, Lindsay, I can't thank you enough.
Thank you so much.
Peace. Sweet. There we have it. Lindsay Manfredi, everybody. I'd like to thank Lindsay for her time. As usual, I would like to thank each and every one of you for your time. I know I said it at the top of the episode and I've been saying it a lot more lately, but please take a couple seconds out of your day and leave us a rating or review on your preferred streaming platform. It helps us get more discovered via the different algorithm sort of processes and stuff. And, you know, the higher we get up in those ratings, the easier it is for me to keep getting really cool guests like Lindsay on the show. So I'd appreciate it. Thank you so much. My name is Travis Mark. You can find out more about me at travismark.com. You can check out The Musician's Mentor at musicians-mentor.com. If you have any questions, drop me a DM or an email. All the details are up on our show notes. But for now, keep pushing, follow your dreams, practice hard, be diligent, have fun. I'll see you next time. Peace.